and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
We have heard that they are targeting as many as 2,000 people initially.
Illinois officials are bracing for potential immigration raids. Our Spotlight Politics team has the latest.
Becoming and remaining a sanctuary city has been a bit of a mayoral tug of war.
President Trump's administration is threatening to punish sanctuary cities. We explore Chicago's history as one and what it means.
We've already been through what we've come to. So the thing is, we've seen devastating times before.
And he never shies away from telling us what he really thinks. Author Michael Eric Dyson on Trump, affirmative action, and the future of American cities. First off tonight, Illinois is now among a growing number of states suing to block President Donald Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship. The order says children born to non-citizens are not, quote, subject to the jurisdiction of the United States and would not be covered by the 14th Amendment. Attorney General Kwame Raoul called Trump's efforts diametrically opposed to American values and said in a statement, quote, we need to discuss bipartisan common sense immigration reforms, but denying birthright citizenship, which dates back centuries and has been upheld twice by the U.S. Supreme Court, is not the solution. Illinois is joined by Washington, Arizona, and Oregon. Additional lawsuits have been filed by the ACLU and 18 other states. Chicagoans could finally get some relief from the sub-zero temperature soon, but some light snow is on the way. It is winter in Chicago. Looking ahead, Wednesday's forecast shows temperatures in the low to mid-20s and a chance for about an inch of snow beginning in the afternoon. A cold weather advisory is still in effect in Cook County until Wednesday as wind chills fall to negative 20 degrees overnight. The National Weather Service is reminding everyone to cover all exposed skin when going out or stay indoors if possible. Visit our website for a map of warming centers in Chicago. Illinois is set to begin phasing out a sub-minimum wage for disabled workers. Governor J.B. Pritzker was at Access Living of Metro Chicago today to sign the Dignity in Pay Act. The legislation will phase out the current voucher program employers can use to pay workers with disabilities by 2029. Advocates say the program allows employers to pay disabled workers less than the minimum wage, and the new law ensures they receive fair wages. The new law also allocates funds for expanding work environments that support people with disabilities.
No longer will individuals who have untapped potential be subject to a one-size-fits-all assumptions and unfair treatments just because of a disability.
Bears fans, this one's for you because the Chicago Bears are making it official. The team announces they've tapped Ben Johnson as their next head coach. Johnson spent the last six seasons with the Detroit Lions, most recently as offensive coordinator. The Lions have been offensive juggernauts as of late, despite coming up short in Saturday's playoff matchup against the Washington Commanders. The Lions averaged more yards and points per game than any other team in the league this season. The Bears could benefit from that kind of help after finishing 28th in points per game this season. Johnson is set to address the media Wednesday at Hallis Hall. The votes have been tallied, and for the second year in a row, a legendary figure from WGN-TV has topped the list of winners in Chicago's Snowplow Naming Contest. Bozo the Clown, a tribute to the classic children's TV clown, took the top spot. According to Streets and Sanitation, thousands of people voted in the contest, which is now in its third year. A few more winners include Lala Plowlooza, Snower Whacker, and Scoop. There it is. Check out our website for a complete list. Up next, Chicago's roots as a sanctuary city. What exactly that means, right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Illinois officials in Chicago's immigrant communities are bracing for potential raids. This after former President Donald Trump was sworn in to a second term yesterday and doubled down on his promise of mass deportations for undocumented immigrants. Trump is also threatening to end federal grants to sanctuary cities like Chicago that limit cooperation with federal immigration authorities. In the latest from our WTTW News Explained series, Joanna Hernandez explores Chicago's roots as a sanctuary city and what it means.
For four decades, Chicago has held the designation of a sanctuary city. But what does it mean, and how has Chicago's status endured? The term sanctuary city refers to any jurisdiction that discourages, limits, or denies cooperation with federal immigration authorities. There are currently hundreds of sanctuary communities in America and 13 sanctuary states. Where do they come from? Well, Berkeley, California claimed the title of first sanctuary city in 1971, the sanctuary city movement really began popping up across the country in the mid-1980s. As President Reagan focused on identifying and deporting undocumented immigrants, churches opened their doors to provide shelter and resources for Central Americans fleeing civil war and violence. In Chicago, becoming and remaining a sanctuary city has been a bit of a mayoral tug of war. Mayor Harold Washington first declared Chicago a sanctuary city in 1985 via executive order. The order prohibited police and city employees from questioning residents about their immigration status and terminated cooperation with federal immigration authorities. Some argued the policy shielded convicted criminals from deportation. And in the 1990s, Mayor Richard M. Daley interpreted the policy to allow city officials to provide immigration information to the feds if the subjects were involved in serious crimes. Chicago's sanctuary policies went from executive order to a strong law with the 2006 Welcoming City Ordinance. In 2012, Mayor Rahm Emanuel and the City Council weakened the law, allowing police to work with federal officials in limited cases. Upon election in 2016, President Donald Trump threatened sanctuary cities with the loss of federal dollars. Nevertheless, the Chicago City Council voted to reaffirm the ordinance. Under Mayor Lori Lightfoot, an expanded welcoming ordinance closed the loopholes opened by Daley and Emanuel, banning all police cooperation with federal immigration authorities. As Chicago enters its 40th year as a sanctuary city, Mayor Brandon Johnson has reaffirmed Chicago's commitment. And today, thousands of refugees and undocumented immigrants have found a safe haven in Chicago. A point of pride for those who believe offering sanctuary is a matter of human rights, and a point of consternation for those who see it as a hurdle for law enforcement.
And you can find the rest of our Emmy-winning WTTW News Explained series on our website. We're back with more right after this. Author and professor Michael Eric Dyson is known for his rapid-fire commentary, threading hip-hop lyrics with Bible verses in his signature alliteration to make his point about politics, pop culture, and certainly racial justice in America. The Vanderbilt professor was back in Chicago recently for a couple of Martin Luther King Jr. Day observances, including the city's interfaith breakfast last week. We sat down with him to get his thoughts on the latest, starting with what he thinks the next 4 years will be like now that President Donald Trump has just begun his second term.
Well, first of all, he's inheriting a tremendously robust economy. Much like the former President Obama said, yeah, you did great because I gave you a great economy. He's inheriting yet another economy. Now, during the election, you know, as politicians on both sides, to be fair, want to do, it's doom and gloom for what the existing administration has done. We promised something different. But he's inheriting a rather robust economy. And if he can do anything to continue that, we would obviously be supportive. At the same time, he's already developed a list that of people that he wants to go after. Liz Cheney and John Bolton. And these are not raving left-wingers. Excuse me. These are not radical libertarians or even liberals. So the tragedy of the next 4 years will be that if we're not able to have government as usual, where the institutions prevail over any particular individual administration, although they're always impacted by them, and we have to both be conscious of the fact that he is the President of the United States of America, but we must also oppose those things that we think are deeply and profoundly problematic. And unfortunately, there's probably going to be a lot to oppose.
You've taught at some of the country's most elite universities, and since Trump's first administration, we know the Supreme Court has struck down the use of race in college admissions. Some universities have already started to notice fewer Black students enrolling.
Sure.
And Hispanics as well. Have you noticed a difference at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, well, not immediately, because Vanderbilt practices a variety of commitment to diversity that is not vulnerable to what the law says. You know, you can obey the law, but my point is, do you want the commercial or the product? You don't have to pronounce or announce what it is that you're attempting to do, because it's important to have education that is diverse along a number of axes: race, class, gender, sexual orientation, geography, region, religion. So those things make for a vibrant classroom, and you don't have to offend any law of affirmative action to achieve those goals. You have to be conscious, you have to be intentional, and you have to understand what makes for a vibrant classroom. Even before DEI or affirmative action, you know, when there were no Black people involved and no women, how did they decide who got into Harvard, Princeton, Yale, right? Hey, you're a violin player from Oklahoma, and we don't have people coming from there. We need you. So there was already a diversity of application even before gender or race came into play, and I suspect we'll have to lean upon those issues. Having said that, there's no denying, looking at Harvard, I think in their law school class, an extreme diminishment of the pool of diverse people there. That's to the detriment of America, right? If America ultimately said, hey, we don't want Black people, you know, in these arenas, then we'd have no Michael Jordan in basketball. Because without affirmative action, Michael Jordan would have never played in the NBA. Without the conscious attempt to bring in people who had been historically denied, we would have never enjoyed his skills. So my point is that it is extremely important for us to continue to practice a variety of diversity in education, even beyond the official or legal restrictions of affirmative action.
And at the same time, companies are slashing their DEI initiatives. Many had been quietly scaling back long before this most recent election, because there are some reflections that people think that some of the big companies are doing it to cozy up to President Trump. What do you think of that? Were these companies sincere in the first place?
Probably not. Or they were, but they feel intimidated and they run, you know, hide at the first prospect of resistance. I think Black people and others have to practice DEI too. Deny economic investment, right? Get involved in a boycott yourselves. I mean, if Walmart thinks that it's okay to cease your program, it's all right for us to cease our economic investment. Or, again, we can ask Walmart, you can get rid of the official DEI program, but do the things that you know are consciously encouraging your customers, a number of whom are people of color, to be involved. So again, there are ways around the legal restrictions that have been imposed. And the affirmative action rulings for education have been taken so rapidly and readily by these companies. Those were not the rulings for them, but they figure, well, let's go along and do the same thing. Well, let's do the same thing when a righteous cause is championed and you want to see the kind of spreading of a good idea, which is diversity, which is having a workforce that reflects those who constitute our communities or those who are our consumers. There's always a way to get to the issue of diversity in a creative fashion if you have the desire or the intent. And for those corporations that don't do it, we got to make them pay.
What do you think of the state of American cities right now? And do you think some of those cities, you know, who are mostly governed by Democrats, will they suffer under a Trump administration?
Oh, there's no question. He's a vitriolic, vicious man. He's small-minded and petty. He's a lugubrious leech. He is a foolish fascist. He is a dim-witted dictator. But that's on a good day and a
nice
man.
Tell me what you really think.
Right. I mean, this is what he has done. He has performed these things. However, I would say to those mayors, a number of whom happen to be African-American, if you have an opportunity to work with a man and forge a connection in a way that's beneficial to your city, go ahead. I'm a social critic. My job is to bring the force of critique to bear. But here we are in Chicago. Think about Brandon Johnson, an extraordinary man, intelligent, well-versed, a union man, a man who's an educator. Look, nobody is immune to criticism, so everybody in that office has to be prepared. But the piling on, when I think about Brandon Scott in Baltimore, who is seen as a DEI mayor, or Karen Bass, because a bridge collapsed because of a ship being out of place, right? Or Karen Bass with the wildfires there in Los Angeles and being pummeled, or Brandon Johnson here in Chicago, despite the economic reversals of fortune for those who are less fortunate and vulnerable into something more powerful. So we've got to say, on the one hand, let's pay attention to the way in which there's a relationship between the federal government and the local government and what goodies you can derive for your people. And at the same time, hold up proudly the banner of commitment to the vulnerable. And cities will suffer to a degree, but they got to fight back. I mean, what Trump has shown is that if you are willing to raise your voice and speak up and say what you believe is true, there are at least enough people who will rally around you to be able to defend your position and forge a kind of coalition that might have significant political impact in the real world.
All right, that's where we'll have to leave it. Thank you, Professor Michael Eric Dyson. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Closing arguments begin tomorrow in the corruption trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump's January 6th pardons will help more than 50 Illinois defendants, and the mayor and governor brace for the president's threats of mass deportations beginning in Chicago. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharon, and Nick Blumberg. Hello, everyone. Okay, so let's start with the president's warnings of an imminent immigration crackdown.
And by invoking the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, I will direct our government to use the full and immense power of federal and state law enforcement to eliminate the presence of all foreign gangs and criminal networks, bringing devastating crime to U.S. soil, including our cities and inner cities.
So, Heather, there were rumors of a large-scale immigration raid that was supposed to allegedly happen in Chicago this morning. Have we seen anything so far?
No. There were no widespread raids anywhere in the country, best we can tell. And this is something that President Trump wants people to see. He's made this sort of a big part of his, you know, approach to this early days of his administration. And it's not clear why they didn't happen today. As first reported by the Wall Street Journal, there was further reporting by the Washington Post that said that maybe this was leaked and that made ICE sort of rethink its plans. But for undocumented immigrants who number in the thousands of Chicago, the threat has not passed. And I think this was just sort of an additional 24-hour period, perhaps, to give people a little bit more chance to prepare. Although there was additional news today from the president on immigration. He has revoked the policy that prohibited ICE from detaining or arresting immigrants at quote-unquote sensitive locations, which includes churches and schools. Now, we in Chicago are very familiar with sort of the use of churches as sanctuary from people sort of declining to comply with deportation efforts. That will not be sort of something that ICE recognizes going forward, according to this order.
And meanwhile, of course, we've got entire communities of immigrants and their families who are in a state of fear right now. Heather, how did Mayor Johnson respond to these mass deportation threats?
Well, we heard from him briefly on Martin Luther King Day, saying that the city would continue to live its values and that the city was being tested. However, he did not have a public schedule today, which was very different from the governor, who spent a little bit of time yesterday in Little Village talking to the businesses who have seen their sort of customers sort of decline precipitously as people sort of stay away from public areas. We didn't hear from him today. And in fact, his press office, as far as I can tell, didn't send out his schedule as they normally do on the days.
Interesting. All right. Feels like that's something to talk about next week. Okay. Today, Governor Pritzker, though, he did, as you mentioned, he talked about the president's comments and how they've impacted the immigrant community.
We should have comprehensive immigration reform in this country and not simply have a president who is scaring people, forcing them out of their jobs because they're afraid to go to work. You go to 26th, go to Little Village, go to Pilsen. I was there yesterday. I was in businesses yesterday that were relatively empty because people are afraid to show up.
Amanda, what else did the governor have to say about this looming immigration crackdown?
He said that Illinois has received no communication from the Trump administration about what may or may not come, and he says he believes that's intentional, part of this theme of sowing chaos and fear. He also made a point, is he has sort of done more and more often lately, of saying that he believes violent criminals who are here and are undocumented should not be protected by Illinois, by ICE. He says that that is something that is already illegal, and he believes that he doesn't want him in Illinois. He doesn't want him in the country. I think that the governor is making a point of this each time he speaks on immigration for truly either political reasons or really to connect with people who are concerned about this threat that you hear voiced by the president now of the United States continuously, that there are criminals amongst our midst who are scary and could hurt them. So he makes a point really to say that in his remarks.
While noting that the vast majority of undocumented immigrants are not criminals, do not have a criminal record, and are sort of not engaged in any illicit activity.
Amanda, is Pritzker saying anything about whether the state can protect any undocumented immigrants from deportation?
He continues to say that Illinois will stand up for its values and keep people safe. Illinois has the Trust Act that provides really sanctuary status and says that law enforcement cannot be working with ICE on deportation orders. So beyond that, though, we don't have a lot of details. But Illinois is joined with three other states to file suit now against the Trump administration, seeking to block it from implementing the executive order that would end the right to birthplace citizenship. So that's certainly a big action on the part of the state.
So another one of President Trump's many executive orders signed yesterday, though, Nick, he pardoned those who were involved in the January 6th attack, as we've mentioned. How many Illinoisans are impacted here?
That's right. This is a sweeping order. More than 1,500 people from all 50 states who have been caught up in this probe of the January 6th riots. More than 50 Illinoisans were a part of this mass pardoning, of which all but a handful of them had already been convicted for the crimes. Some of them had already served prison time or probation. Some of them were still behind bars. But prosecutors began formal dismissal proceedings today to do away with the outstanding cases. These include people from far-right extremist groups like the Oath Keepers, like the Proud Boys. In fact, Trump commuted sentences from leaders of those two groups. There was, a high-profile case of a former Chicago police officer who was sentenced to probation after January 6th and lost his job, and his attorney has given quotes to the Sun-Times, to the Tribune I saw reporting today, saying that he was scapegoated. He's going to perhaps try to get his job back on the force, although that is probably a very unlikely outcome.
All right, that's something that we'll be keeping an eye on out for, just to see whether or not that actually happens. In the Madigan trial, closing arguments expected to start tomorrow. This is the last chance, of course, for attorneys to make their pitch to the jury. Amanda, Nick, coming to you first. Amanda, what are some of your thoughts on the main points that they're going to try and hit home?
Well, as we've been talking about, you had Madigan take the stand, and this was a jury that was selected because they didn't know a lot about Illinois politics. So while anybody who has been following our program certainly knows about
and everyone
Madigan,
should be
exactly, that's true
as they all are.
About his really vaunted status in Illinois, these are people who might not know that he got on the stand and presented himself as somebody who is non-confrontational, and therefore that's why he didn't maybe speak more harshly when former Alderman Danny Solis brought up a quid pro quo. So I think you're going to hear that sort of defense. He's a grandpa. He worked tremendously hard, as he had witnesses there. And I think what I'm really going to be watching for is how hard his team and McLean's team go against one another. This is something that his co-defendant and former good friend Mike McLean, a lobbyist, had both said we wanted to separate the court case because they were afraid that it would be pointing fingers at the other. How much of that's going to happen?
There was a motion, saying the Madigan attorneys may act as second prosecutors. I think prosecutors in particular are going to have to really do their best to simplify what's an incredibly complex case, and to Amanda's point, make clear just how significant of a figure Mike Madigan was. They have had, countless hours of testimony and secret recordings. They're going to have to, as they've been trying to do all along, boil this down in as simple as terms as possible. Although, we expect the prosecutors closing to go Wednesday and Thursday. There'll be, defense. There'll be a rebuttal. There'll be long jury instructions. Yeah. So this day is not over yet.
Yeah, and I think it's supposed to go to the jury next week. That's the plan. Obviously, that can shift.
We'll see.
We'll see. It's been a big trial, so What's a few more days, everybody? All right, that's Spotlight. Heather Sharone, Amanda Vinicky, Nick Blumberg. Thanks. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. If you're looking for more context on the biggest news of the day, sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. You can subscribe at WTTW.com/newsletter and have it in your inbox tomorrow morning. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Meet Chicago's new director of reentry and his goals for those returning home after incarceration. And a new PBS documentary series explores the profound impact of the great migration of Black Americans from the South. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm, and proud sponsor of programming that offers advice and strategies to enhance the physical and mental well-being of fellow legal practitioners in Illinois.